4th of July is coming up. Traditionally a day of celebrating our independence. Yeah, it's Independence Day. There's parades, or there used to be parades, and fireworks, and the waving of old glory, and barbecues, and red, white, and blue bunting on your picnic tables. And a few years ago, I remember a leading retailer selling red, white, and blue doormats so you could wipe your feet on the colors of our flag. And I ask you, where does the kneeling come in? And in a few years, what are we going to call that monument on the National Mall in Washington? We're going to call it the Kaepernick Monument once we erase George Washington's name from all our history? And will we even have a 4th of July? Or if we do, will Americans be expected to kneel and sing a new anthem? The Big Rock Candy Mountain, where everything is free? Years ago, I told you how to catch wild pigs, and I guess I'll have to tell you again sometime. But right now, as you're thinking of the Independence Day celebrations, remember what it was about. We once had pride in our country, and we prized an amazing idea that you could think for yourself in America and say what you felt. But now, if you think for yourself, if you refuse to bend the knee, you could be canceled out, at least professionally, by the woke world. And you're seeing that, aren't you? We talked about it on the last podcast. And today, we'll be talking with Larry Elder, the sage of South Central, my friend, about his riveting, emotional, and patriotic, yes, patriotic new film, Uncle Tom. Because what is it about but people standing up and thinking for themselves? There's something incredibly courageous about black Americans refusing to kneel to the white woke party. They're vilified by media and by politicians as traitors to the black community. Why? Because they dare question democratic policy that has run big city America for the last 80 years or so, that destroyed the black family, that keeps minorities trapped in substandard schools, and churns out the reliable black vote, even as Democrats court a new interest group. Latinos. But for daring to question it, Elder and others are called race traitors and agents of white suppression, even though they're black, and Uncle Toms, and worse. Another thing happens in Chicago on the 4th of July weekend, and it happened the weekend before and the weekend before that. Minority children, babies, are gunned down in the street gang wars. They're not gunned down in Wilmette or Winnetka or Western Springs where we used to live, or Hinsdale. They're gunned down on the south and west sides of Chicago. And you're supposed to call it gun violence, not gang violence, but that's what it is. A three-year-old was killed last weekend, and now a one-year-old in a car seat, the car with the child and his mother, shot six or seven times. It was no accident. And a 10-year-old girl killed by gang fire in Logan Square. The bullet caught her in the head in her own home, like that 13-year-old girl shot in the neck a week before. No protests for them. You ever wonder why? Why aren't there protests for them? Because protesting their murders doesn't serve Chicago politics. Murdered children have no political unity for the Democrats and the woke world. The protests now are about keeping black people angry and hurting those white suburban women with their white suburban guilt and their hate has no home here signs in the front lawns, and hurting them into the Democratic fold and keeping them there for the November elections. There's a lot of political money from the donor class that lives in the woke world, in the rich neighborhoods of Chicago, and especially in the burbs. So talking about black babies killed in the street gang wars, that doesn't really help the Chicago political class. It doesn't help the Democrats with their suburban donors. President Trump offered to help. And he got snarky with Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker, and they got snarky right back. But how are they able to reject the president's offer to help to do something about the violence that's out of control? It's Trump. They use anti-Trump sentiment in blue Democratic Illinois as a shield. They use it to deflect. They're protected. If you say, well, Trump might have a point, you'll be called a witch. It's bizarre, yes, but it works for them. And in this bizarre political Chicago and Illinois, we forget the names of the dead children as they're carried away in Chicago's river of violence. Like I said, nationally syndicated Salem radio host Larry Elder, black conservative, understands this. He understands the use of race and of guilt, and he'll be with us soon. And Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokon Show on WGN Radio, is here. And if we sound halfway decent, it's because Jeff is the best radio producer in the business. And me? I'm John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and a proud member of that newspaper's editorial board. And you, wondering if it's still okay to put your hand over your heart and sing the Star Spangled Banner on the 4th of July, on Independence Day? And you, who are worrying and wondering, why aren't there protests over the slaughter of children in the gang wars? You're on the Chicago Way, on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
The movie Uncle Tom is provocative. I think it's the best film I've seen in quite some time. Maybe the most important film that anyone in America can see right now. It is optimistic. It is truthful. And I've always believed that the bravest people among us are those who stand up, and there's none braver than black conservatives in America. Larry Elder made this movie along with a young director, and Larry Elder is our guest on the Chicago Way. Hello, Larry. Thanks for coming on.
And thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Larry, tell me why you made this movie.
I made the movie because we're not having a debate in this country in general and in the black community in particular about what are the best policies to advance the black community. Democrats have somehow managed to get 95% of black voters to vote for them, even though, in my opinion, many of their policies are not only not advancing the interests of the black community, but are harmful. For example, the so-called War on Poverty, launched in the mid-60s by Lyndon Johnson, arrested a declining level of poverty going on in the black community and it flatlined after that. And what the welfare state has done, in my opinion, is it's incentivized women, John, to marry the government and allowed men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. We've gone from 25% of black kids born outside of wedlock in 1965 to nearly 70% now. You cannot attribute that to Jim Crow and racism. It has to do with bad government policy. And rather than rethink that, whatever I or Candace Owens or Alan West or Herman Cain or some of the others in the film raise these topics, instead of this sparking a healthy discussion, people like myself are called Uncle Toms, coons, self-loathers, as if somehow we are against the best interest of the black community. And the movie simply asks a very simple question. Why can't we have an intelligent, healthy discussion within the black community without a whole cadre of well-educated, bright, thoughtful black people being maligned and discarded as sellouts? What's prompting this? And that's what the movie spends about an hour and 40 minutes exploring. And as you know, John, it starts out with a young man who's not a politician. He's just a regular, hardworking guy. His name is Chad Jackson.
A hero.
Born-again Christian. But he's still a Democrat, even though he became a Christian. And a fellow Christian suggested that he read both the Republican Party platforms and the Democratic Party platforms. And after Chad did that, he said, damn, I'm a Republican. And the movie is about the grief that he got from friends and family, including from his own mom, once he no longer started thinking of himself as a victim. And kind of the theme throughout the movie is, this is America, for crying out loud. People have overcome huge obstacles. And right now, in the year 2020, race has never been a more insignificant factor in terms of improving your own life.
But it is a significant factor in terms of our politics. And it's almost as if, well, I don't know. What do you make of all this that's going on right now?
Well, this business about race and racism, institution of racism, systemic racism, structural racism, and Beto O'Rourke gave us a new one, John, foundational racism. The Democrat Party does it because they want to get black people, keep black people angry. Once you're angry, you don't think about the fact that your nearby school is a school where only 3% of the kids can do math at grade level, and the school is run by the Crips. That is my high school. I went to a school called Crenshaw High School, John. That's a high school that was featured in Boys in the Hood. And as I said, right now, only 3% of kids at that high school can do math at grade level. Now, what parent sends their kid to a school where only 3% of the kids can do math at grade level and a school that is dominated by the Crips? No responsible parent would do that. But the Democratic Party is mandating that your kid go there whether you want to or not. The Republican Party wants to give this parent a voucher. And the polls show that urban parents, black and brown, support private school vouchers. The polls show that white Democrats do not. And the white Democrats wouldn't put their kid in a urban school in a million years. And so who is advancing your best interests? All I'm asking is, can we have this discussion without people like myself and others being shut down and maligned as somehow enemies of the people? So Democrats do that in order to stir black people up, to get them angry. The media does it. And I think, John, with a lot of these young reporters with the best of intentions honestly believe that racism remains this huge impediment in American life, because they're taught that by their professors, they're taught that by the media, they're taught that by Hollywood. So they are social justice warriors who want to right the wrongs of the past. Never mind if you invented a vaccine, forget about the coronavirus for a second, invent a vaccine to rid America of racism. Will 70% of black kids still be born to unwed mothers? Yes. Will 50% of urban high school blacks in some cities be dropping out? Yes. Will those who do graduate be unable to read, write, and compute at grade level, which is far too often the situation? Yes. Will 25% of young black men still have criminal records, either having been arrested in jail, on parole, or probation? If the answer is yes to these questions, then I submit that institutional racism is not the problem, and its elimination is not the solution.
I've argued for a long time that that public education is a crime against civil rights in this country. What I see in Chicago and elsewhere, and I've written about it, is that public education serves the teachers' unions. It serves the politicians who have patronage throughout the bureaucracy, and it serves the vendors who sell everything from milk to apples to books and other products. The black children and the black families and minority families in general are at the back of the line. And to say it is threatening to them. But when I say it, I'm just called a racist. When you say it, you're called Uncle Tom.
Well, that's right. And the proof is in the pudding. I know you've written about this, John, because I read some of your stuff, and I've often quoted some of your stuff. The proof is in the
King
pudding.
King of beers. King of beers. King of beers, man. That was the best compliment I've ever gotten was from Larry Elder referring to Jesse Jackson when he had his beer hustle going on as the King of Beers. And I thought, man, I've arrived. But really the best compliment is having you on this podcast and talking to you and having seen your film with my family, my sons, my wife. They were quite emotional watching this. Outstanding.
Well, thank you for that. And as I was saying, the proof is in the pudding regarding public education. Where do teachers, public school teachers with school age kids, send their own kids? Now, nationwide, around 10% of families put their kids in private school. Nationwide, around 6% of black families do. But in Philadelphia, of the teachers, public school teachers with school-age kids, 44% of them have them in private schools. In your city, 39% of public school teachers, Chicago, have their kids in private school. And it's around 28% here in L.A. So the people that know the schools the best are not using them for their own kids. That's the equivalent of opening up a restaurant and saying, come on in, just don't eat the food.
Larry, tell me about why you chose the title.
Well, the young film director came to me with that title. It was his idea, and he wanted to interview me about this project called Uncle Tom, where he was going to discuss the lack of appreciation for people with a different point of view within the black community. And I thought it was a provocative title, but I thought it was an eye-catching title. And the idea was to turn the tables. You call people like me Uncle Tom, okay, let's accept that moniker. And it turns out, if you read the book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, the character Uncle Tom was actually a hero, and he was based on a real-life black man named Josiah Henson. And so when people call people like me Uncle Tom, not only are they trying to put me down, of course, but it also shows their ignorance. They haven't read the book. The real villain in the book was named Sambo. And as I mentioned, Uncle Tom was a crafty black man who had bamboozled the white masters into thinking that he was a sellout when, in fact, he was helping slaves escape. So all it does is show you that people have not read the book. But, of course, that's not the point. The point is to shut down conversation, and that's what they do. And the failure to have this discussion, as I said, is therefore consigning kids to bad, underperforming schools. Vouchers have been tried in places like Milwaukee and other places, and the graduation rates have improved substantially. Parental satisfaction improved substantially. Reading and math scores have improved somewhat. So the idea that we're not having this discussion is really mind-boggling to me, and I'm hoping the movie will open some eyes. The movie, as you know, also talks about the sordid racist history of the Democrat Party that a lot of young people are not taught in school. It also puts a lie to the notion that in the mid-60s, all of a sudden, all the bigots left the Democratic Party and joined the Republican Party.
In the movie, by the way, you can get this movie by going to UncleTom.com. Click on the links and watch the movie. Rent it with your family or your friends. We're talking to Larry Elder, radio host, nationally syndicated, author of many books. I see, Larry, that some of my heroes are prominently featured, like Thomas Sowell, Robert Woodson, mm-hmm. and you know you're obviously featured. But and Candace Owens is a fascinating young woman who I didn't know this until I saw this that she considers you her mentor. But there are so many others like Chad Jackson, Kevin Austin, mm-hmm. well, obviously Herman Cain, so many. Carol Swain, the I think she's the law professor of Princeton, right?
She was the law professor from Vanderbilt.
Oh, Vanderbilt, yes. Who mm-hmm. She argued against affirmative action because she thought that it was that kids weren't ready. Many kids that it was funneling too many kids into universities where they would have difficulty succeeding because they weren't ready because they had crappy public school educations. And she was vilified the fact is that the larger personalities have some, like yourself and others that I mentioned, have some protection, some support, you know, institutionally or organizationally. But then others, like Mr. Chad O. Jackson, mm-hmm. or maybe Brandon Tatum years ago, people like this were crushed by this, I don't know what you call it, racism or self-loathing. And I think much of it is directed by the white liberal left to keep people down and not to have dissenting voices because they want control of this particular group. And I wonder how you think how do they deal with it? How do they deal with being called an Uncle Tom?
Well, exactly. And that's why we did the film. You know, there's a magazine called Ebony Magazine. It no longer has the clout it used to have, but it was the most prominent black magazine for decades. And every year, John, they would have a feature called the 100 Most Influential Black Americans. And every year, absent on that list would be Clarence Thomas. Never mind, he's one of the 9 members of the Supreme Court, and by definition is influential. He's not included. Walter Williams is not included. To my knowledge, he is the only black man to become the chairman of a non-black economics department of a college or university. And then Thomas Sowell, a man that David Mamet, the playwriter, credited with converting him from a, quote, brain-dead liberal. He calls Thomas Sowell America's greatest contemporary philosopher. Not historian, not economist, philosopher. And many black people don't know who the hell he is. And one of the reasons I made this film is to introduce these people to a broad audience because they deserve a great deal of appreciation. They are geniuses, brilliant thinkers, insightful thinkers. And if more black people listened to them, we'd have a lot fewer problems.
And that's why I think the media in general, which is a leftist institution now, loathes you and people like you because it's all about maintaining control. But one amazing feature of this film, besides the Al Gore's father thing, and I want to get into that, was your decision not to put names, you know, write the names under the people mm-hmm. as they were, the characters as they were introduced. So you, if you knew who Robert Woodson was, and I know him and I've interviewed him, or you, or Candace Owens, but then, you know, Chad Jackson and many other people in the film were not, they're not identified. They're just people talking.
Right.
At first I thought, as a columnist who wants to write about this, I thought, oh, damn it. You know, I gotta check all these names. And then I thought, this is brilliant because this is every man talking or every woman talking. It seemed like so general. I don't know.
We had a long debate about whether or not we ought to put names. We had a couple of private screenings. Maybe 300 or 400 people saw it before it went on the online release. And of all the notes we got, that was the one that was most common. I would like to know their names as they are speaking. And we decided not to do that for a couple of reasons. I want this to read like a movie, like a film, not like a term paper. And also I wanted people to not pay attention to that and just pay attention to what they were saying. And finally, I thought it would cause people to wait out the whole movie because we were going to identify them at the end. And so therefore, you got to stay glued to your seat to find out who these people are, assuming they prompted your curiosity. So for all those reasons, we decided not to put names on it until the end.
It's just so good. So what kind of reception are you getting from this film?
Are you sitting down?
Yeah, I've already done my research, Mr. Elder, but I just want, this is broadcast, so I want you to, or podcast, so I want you to tell me.
Okay. It was released on Friday the 19th, on Juneteenth. That's the day that blacks celebrate liberation from slavery. Also, that's why we chose that date. And in the opening weekend, it doubled the opening weekend box office receipts of Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore's political documentary that became the fifth highest grossing documentary of all time at $58 million. So far, Uncle Tom is outperforming that movie.
You already made more than $58 million, my friend, in 1 week? Is that what you're telling me?
I said their entire run was $58 million. The first 5 days this movie's been out, it has outpaced Bowling for Columbine. Whether it ends up at $58 million, who the hell knows?
If it does, you'll
be the first to know.
I can write four columns a week in a podcast, but my wife balances the checkbook, so that's how we go. The difficulty, I don't think people in Chicago and elsewhere understand the pain that it takes to stand up and run counter to the ethnic group that you're supposed to be a part of. We can't be Americans as a immigrant son whose dad plowed behind a mule. I'm often called a child of privilege, you know. Mm-hmm. The mule was named Truman, by the way, who you highlight in your piece, in your movie, Uncle Tom. But I wonder, from your experiences, from your own personal experience, what has that been like for you to be vilified with these epithets? And when you hear them, especially from Black people's mouths, to hear that, all those words that we don't say and are afraid to say and should never say, when I hear that, it's like revolting to me. I mean, in a way, it's that, and I can just imagine Greeks have and I'm Greek American, we have a phrase like this, traitor, sellout. It's called Ephialtes. Mm. And if you saw the movie 300, you know, Ephialtes is the Spartan who is the traitor and helps King Xerxes kill the Spartans by coming around to the back and killing them. So if you call somebody Ephialtes, that's bad. Nobody ever names their kid Ephialtes. But for you, right? For you, how's the road been for you?
Well, for me, I have been called these kinds of names ever since I can remember. I'm the kid in my history class who raises his hand and simply offers a different perspective than the perspective that most kids have. And for that reason, I'm called a sellout, Uncle Tom. I've been called that all my life. And I wasn't even particularly political until later on. When I first started on radio, John, my first few days, every third caller was a Black person calling me a name, calling me an Uncle Tom. One of my close friends I've known ever since high school and I were talking about this, and he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "Larry, relax. You're making the right enemies. I don't expect people to love me. I feel sort of the way Candace Owens does in the film. There's a part in the film where she says, I'm like an alarm clock. It may tick you off in the morning, but you know you have to get up and do what you have to do. So I'm not here to be popular. I would love to be loved, but I know that's not going to happen because I'm telling people stuff they don't want to hear. I have long since gotten over the idea that I should react emotionally when someone calls me a name. I now feel sorry for them. I feel sorry that you have been so corrupted and so polluted by what I call the access of indoctrination, Hollywood media, academia, that I, Larry Elder, am your villain, not the welfare state, not bad economic policies, not porous borders that allow illegal aliens, unskilled ones, to threaten jobs that would otherwise be held by Black and brown workers and puts downward pressure on their wages. I'm the bad guy. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with your thinking? Who has indoctrinated you like that? That's my reaction to it.
Who turned you into that crab at the bottom of the bucket? Who turned you into that?
Well, exactly. And my mother and father always told my brothers and me, no one can make you feel inferior without your permission. If you feel you're doing the right thing, you feel that you've gotten the right positions, stand like a rock and defend your positions. And that's kind of what I do. I was looking the other day, John, at a video of Sammy Davis Jr. You remember that time he hugged Richard Nixon? And he got vilified, I mean, by the Black community as a sellout and as an Uncle Tom. Well, he went to the Apollo Theater and asked if he could perform. And the crowd was booing him at first. And he stood and took it because he says, I care about my people. Essentially, he said, I'm on your side, even if you're not on my side. And he's saying, I've got to be me. And when he finished, people were crying. They were standing up, giving him a standing ovation because he stood his ground. And so when you stand your ground and you are offering data, facts, sooner or later, assuming people have not been so brainwashed
they're going to figure out that maybe, just maybe, this guy's onto something. And that's what I think this film is doing.
But that makes you dangerous, Larry.
I know it does. It makes me real dangerous because I threaten the hold the Democratic Party has on black people. The reason they have this hold is that they want black people to think of themselves as what I call victocrats, as victims, as eternally aggrieved people, not as individuals who are concerned about schools, who are concerned about crime, who are concerned about the economy. No, it's all about racism, racism, racism. And by the way, we, the Democrats, are the white horse, and those guys over there, they're wearing the black hat and they're twirling the mustaches and they're flipping a 25% coin. This is how Republicans have been characterized by the Democrats, by the media, and they all do it for, as you said before, for power, to maintain their control.
In the fine and groundbreaking and totally incredibly good documentary, Uncle Tom, you could get it at uncletom.com. Click on it, watch it with your kids, your family, and your friends. There is a mention of a heroic man from Illinois and one who I wouldn't call heroic from Tennessee. That was the heroic man from Illinois was Everett Dirksen,
right?
Chain smoking Republican who really didn't even campaign. Towards the end, he just said, yeah, I'm running, and he won.
Right.
Who helped marshal the votes necessary for the Civil Rights Act to pass. There was another man that you mentioned who was from Tennessee. I think he was from Tennessee. Where was he from? I don't know.
He's from Tennessee.
Al Gore's father. Tell me about that.
Well, one of the things that we tackle in the documentary Uncle Tom is this notion that in the mid-60s, all of a sudden, because of the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, all the racists left the Democratic Party and they joined the Republican Party. And the problem with that is that it's simply flat out not true. You look at all the Democrat senators who voted against the Civil Rights Act and ask yourself how many of them switched and became Republicans. The answer, one, Strom Thurmond. Look at all the Democrats in the House who voted against the Civil Rights Act of 64, and how many of them switched to the Republican Party? One. And I can't even remember his name, and I doubt that most people even know his name. And Al Gore's father helped to lead what was then, I believe still is, the longest filibuster in the history of the Senate to try to prevent the bill from ever coming on the floor for a vote. Al Gore's father was born a Democrat, lived a Democrat, died a Democrat, as was George Wallace, the one that stood in front of the school door and said, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. Born a Democrat, died a Democrat. The idea that if I am a white racist and I want to leave my party because the Civil Rights Act of 64 has passed, why would I leave the party and join the party whose members voted for it at a higher percentage than the party I left? It doesn't make any sense. The reason the South became more and more Republican, by the way, that took about 30 years for that to happen, is the same reason everybody else becomes Republican. Democrats became far more left-wing, far more anti-gun, pro-tax, pro-abortion. They were anti-war, anti the Vietnam War. And so the South became more and more estranged from the Democratic Party the same way other people became more and more estranged from the Democratic Party. It had nothing to do with the passage of the Civil Rights Act whatsoever. It is a lie that is perpetuated because the Democrats don't want people to know about their sordid history. This is the party of slavery. Very few Republicans own slaves. Near as I can figure out, there might have been 7 or 8 Republican individuals who owned slaves. Outside of that, it was a massive institution run by Democrats. And Democrats opposed the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and the 15th Amendment. These are amendments that freed the slaves, made them citizens, and gave them the right to vote, at least on paper. The Democrats opposed all of that. Democrats founded the KKK. I was once fact-checked on that, John. I was on television, and I said that in one of the media matters, or one of them fact-checked me. Larry Elder says the Democratic Party founded the KKK. Not true. I didn't say Democrat Party. I said Democrats.
Yeah.
And they said, well, that part is true. But and then they added something I didn't say and then fact-checked what I didn't say and then said I was false.
They didn't like Greeks either. They had a thing where they, if you went to a Greek candy shop, because that's all we could do then, you came off the fields, either own your own candy shop or you could be a shoeshine guy. And I never thought shoeshining was, like, demeaning because my grandfather did it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and the point being, look, these immigrants who were for 400 years in Greece subject to the Ottoman Turks, their firstborn children taken from them and turned into special forces of Turkish army so they could attack their own people. The churches were allowed to continue, but they were, but the culture was destroyed. Mm-hmm. They come here in the early part of the 1900s, like my grandfather. They couldn't sleep in homes because, or even indoors because, you know, Greeks couldn't, we had to sleep in the barn. But they didn't think of themselves as victims.
Mm-hmm.
They saw an opportunity, just like, I think, you know, African immigrants from Africa don't see themselves as victims. And that's why, I think that's why they're succeeding in this country. Black Americans who were, first or second generation removed from Africa. In closing, it looks to me like Uncle Tom stresses the idea that if you're a victim, you don't think for yourself. But if you want to think for yourself, sooner or later, you won't see yourself as a victim, but as a man or a woman with a chance.
Absolutely. My father was kicked out of the house, John, when he was 13 years old by an irresponsible mother. He never met his biological father. My last name, Elder, was the name of one of the men who was involved in his mom's life. He was an alcoholic who was physically abusive to my dad's mom and to my father. My father comes home at the age of 13, quarrels with his mom's then boyfriend. She sides with the boyfriend and throws him out of the house, never to return. You're talking about a black boy, Athens, Georgia, Jim Crow South at the beginning of the Great Depression. I defy very many of your listeners to find somebody who had a hand dealt like that. My father just picked himself up, took whatever job he could get. He became a Marine, served in World War II, stationed on Guam. He comes back. He gets two jobs as a janitor cleaning toilets. He cooked for a family on the weekend to get additional money and went to night school to get his GED, saved up enough money to start a little restaurant, ran it successfully, bought some property around the restaurant, and comfortably retired. Now, this is what happens in America. And my father was a lifelong Republican. He always told my brothers and me, Democrats want to give you something for nothing. And when you try and get something for nothing, you almost always end up getting nothing for something. And he told my brothers and me the following: hard work wins. You can't get out. You get out of life what you put into it. You cannot control the outcome, but Larry, you are 100% in control of the effort. And before you whine about what somebody did to you, go to the nearest mirror, ask yourself, what could I have done to change the outcome? And finally, he told my brothers and me, no matter how good you are, how careful you are, bad stuff will happen. How you deal with that bad stuff will tell your mother and me if we raised men.
You know, you're going to get play from some people, you know, like me, and you've been on Fox and other the Eric Metaxas show.
Mm-hmm.
But what about black radio? You know, urban black radio. Are you going to get shut out of there? Or do you think there are people that have the guts to put you on?
I think that I will end up doing a lot of urban radio and urban television. I don't think they can ignore this, John. Look at this phenomenon. Look at these reviews on IMBD. There's over 120 or so written ones, almost all of them giving the movie 10 out of 10 stars. I have a Google alert for my name, and I'm seeing my name cropping up here and there in some black media or black blogs. It's already been two videos that have been put up on YouTube, black people discussing the movie. One guy had an hour and a half, almost 3-hour video where he was watching the movie in real time and taking calls and getting responses from other people as they were watching it. So something is happening. It will not be ignored.
Larry Elder, producer of Uncle Tom. See it with your friends, with your family. It is possibly, I think, not even possibly, it's the most important film anyone in America can see right now. Thanks, Larry Elder.
John, thank you so much. God bless.
Jeff Carlin, what'd you think? Amazing, huh? Amazing movie.
Yeah, powerful. I mean, we've talked to some interesting people about some interesting things, but you know, Johnny's always said that the rarest person in this country, at least, is a black conservative. And you can see why, because that movie sure paints a picture of why it's an outlier. And it's not something, not a road that's easily traveled.
But it's a conservative going against type, because black people are supposed to be lockstep with one party, is extremely threatening, which is why the white Democrats hate them. But it's also revealing, in terms of the dynamics inside that group, why people call people Uncle Tom, as if they're selling out, when really what they're trying to do is save their people. I was just stunned by the movie. And so for Larry Elder, nationally broadcast radio host, conservative, and African-American, or black, with a capital B now, as we do. Uncle Tom, the movie, or UncleTom.com is where you want to go. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokan Show, And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokan Show and WGNAM. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, a man whose own dad plowed his fields with a mule named Truman, columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. Thanks for being here on another edition of the Chicago Way.